It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to Bear and Balance. I'm Jeff Berkus, a writer for Windy City Gridiron, and I'm joined by the editor of that fine website. That is Lester A. Wiltfong Jr. Lester, the Bears dropped the 21st game in the Matt Eberflus era. But other than that, how you doing?
I can't complain. You know, daylight saving time is now a thing, so it's pitch black here in the Midwest, and I'm not a big fan of it. I mean, I'm not really anti-daylight saving. I don't get the point. Like, what's the point of it now? Like, what's the deal here?
Do you want it to go away forever, or do you want to like keep the daylight savings time forever?
I think we should have it go away forever. But if I understand that, you know, like, what is the reasoning? I know if someone from Iowa like yourself, we probably have the actual reasoning behind why it's still a thing. I know that's supposed to be go away. I thought that was like a law was passed at some point, but then it just never happens.
I think it was close to going away. And okay. Some states can choose to, or regions or states can choose to not exercise. This is not a daylight savings time show, but I believe that the major argument for going back to standard time is that children at the bus stop would be standing in the dark if you didn't move it back. But I think that the idea of trying to give us a little bit more daylight later, you know, I like quite a bit, actually. I wish it would just remain. I like having daylight a little later.
That's what I want.
Not quite as an agrarian society as we used to be. And so I think that we could, you know, time's a construct. We can start it whenever we want. But I would rather have it be a little later in the day. I also think there's something about circadian rhythms that has to do with something. But we won't get into that. That's not what we're talking about today. This is a football podcast. We are way off the rails. Our pregame was off the rails. You know, the intro's off the rails. Why don't we talk about football?
And let's do it.
We do that by starting in the trenches with our trench tribute. And I think there's a very clear winner this week. And so why don't you start? And if we both have the same guy, we both have the same guy. What are you going to do?
I got a feeling we are going to have the same guy because Tevin Jenkins has been balling it out this whole season. You're wearing the shirts, you know, you can get our shirt there with the pancake power from our guys at 500 level. Use our promo code for 20% off gridiron 20. That's one of JB's fun designs there. One of the few designs that are actually worthy of a purchase this season, but we had a lot of fun with those guys early this season. Hopefully we can do a few more t-shirts here, but yeah, Tevin Jenkins, man, he just watching live, I'm like, yep, he's having a nice game. I know Olin Krutz, a couple other guys, they tweeted out some stuff during the game, some clips. I went back and watched it again. He is that dude. And I know he's not up for an extension yet. This is his third season. But I think when this offseason comes, if he stays healthy, I think Ryan Poles really has to think about locking this guy up long term, because when he's in the field, he is outstanding.
And wouldn't that be funny? Because the initial clash between Ryan Poles and Tevin Jenkins when he came in, you know, you heard some grumblings that you know, Poles didn't like anybody on this offensive line, right? Like he wanted to replace the whole offensive line, just did not like the way they played. You know, thought they were kind of soft or whatever. You know, you heard, I hate that, talking about professional football players and using the term soft, because these guys have made it through so much junk that there's no way that any of them are soft. But you know, let's just say, like, oh, maybe he's a little bit more susceptible to injury, and they're worried about his back issues and all that kind of stuff. But the issue was they did not see him as a tackle. They wanted him to move into guard. Jenkins didn't necessarily like that. You know, guards don't make as much money as tackles. I think that's probably part of it, but it's also probably part of what he saw himself as the league, and that's something to deal with. But he has taken that opportunity, and when he's been on the field, he's been improving all of the time to this point where he's been fantastic since he's returned from injury. And again, like he had an injury earlier in the year where he strained calf muscles, and sort of the word was that it was over conditioning by this coaching staff, right? Like it was kind of a self-inflicted wound by this coaching staff to run these guys through the ringer after that joint practice with the Colts. So when Jenkins has been on the field, he's been nothing short of fantastic, and they've flipped him back and forth between that left and right guard. So, you know, we're seeing him settle in. And what I find interesting, Lester, is that, you know, Nate Davis is going to come back and play football for this team at some point. You paid him a lot of money. You're going to insert him back in the lineup. They seem to try to find every excuse in the book to keep Cody Whitehair on the field. And Tevin Jenkins is clearly their best lineman right now. So what do you do when Nate Davis gets back on the field?
Yes, we've talked about this a couple of weeks. It's like Cody Whitehair, the center experience has got to be over. You know, I mean, Lucas Patrick's not much better. I mean, I think he dribbled one back to Bajan in the game on Sunday. But you can't keep putting guys out there at center unless they can get, you know, 95% of the snaps back there. And I think that's where Patrick is right now. I mean, you would like the 100. I mean, that's a spot you should never miss. But the Bears don't have that luxury of a guy that can actually snap the ball consistently. So it's got to be Whitehair to the bench. You know, he's going to be a very highly paid swing guard, swing center, swing interior guy, which is fine. I mean, at this point in his career, if that's who you are, that's who you are. Tevin Jenkins needs to be in a starting lineup. Nate Davis, like you said, got a ton of money. And he was playing good football, too, before he got injured. He had the high ankle sprain. So I think if you put those two in there, you lock Jenkins up, then the next 4 or 5 years, these are your guards. And then you find a center in the offseason. And now your interior is pretty damn good. Darnell Wright's pretty good at right tackle. You know, they still like Braxton Jones, but I think there may be a chance they go a different direction in the offseason just because of how the draft may fall. We'll see. I like Braxton Jones a lot at left tackle myself, but we got to see what happens here the rest of the season. But the Bears O-line, they still got to work on their depth, but I think that they have a chance to be pretty good here in the future.
I think overall their pass pro looked really good yesterday, and I think that they gave Tyson Bajan quite a bit of time to sit back there in the pocket. And so you've seen them improve over time. You know, I've been tracking the different starting line combinations. They still haven't got back to their original plan, right? Let's say we have 7 different combinations over 9 games. It's a lot. It's quite the pace that they're on. But you're starting to see a little bit of what you would hope that we would have seen coming into the year. And I think that's particularly showing up in the pass pro. Last year, it seemed like they were quite good at establishing the run. You know, I think Deontay Foreman's, you know, been pretty good behind that line over the last couple of weeks, but you don't necessarily see that identity, but you do like to see that this improvement in the pass pro. So I think overall for a Trench Tribute, you know, just shouting out the pass pro, I think is worthwhile here too.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, part of that is, of course, Tyson Bajan to get the balls out pretty quick. That's kind of what he does there. He doesn't hold it long. He doesn't try and make big plays. He tries just to, you know, navigate it, play the point guard role, which is fine. I mean, that's who he is at this point in his career, undrafted free agent. So I'm sure we'll touch on him a little more later, though, once we move through the format here.
Well, let's do that. Let's get to our sweet tweets portion of the program. So I'm going to start us off today. So our friend Brenda, a former guest here and reporter from camp a couple of years ago. So she's at Brenda J. Rebel. She says she's trying to figure out how much Justin needs to ball out so we can keep him, but lose enough so that we get rid of Getsy, but not too much where they draft a new quarterback. And so I wanted to highlight this one because I thought it was kind of funny, the mental gymnastics, a little bit of trying to thread the needle here. But a little bit of the mental gymnastics I think a lot of Bears fans are going through right now, because they see the reality of the 2 draft picks that the Bears have looking like they might be pretty high. They know that there's going to be some good quarterback prospects in this next draft. A lot of people really like Justin Fields. I mean, I'm one of them. I really like Justin Fields. I really want him to succeed somewhere in this league, even if it's not a Navy and Orange. But I also want Luke Getsy to be nowhere near this team. And I want this coaching staff to be gone, right? And so, you know, is there a scenario out there where you could see the Bears moving forward with Justin Fields, but with a new coaching staff?
That's a good tweet. Yeah, that's interesting. That's definitely the question here. I mean, if Fields balls out and he shows, you know, he changes everyone's mind, you know, the people that are thinking that they're going to move on, that's going to mean Getsy's probably doing pretty good here. So that's a tough one. I mean, it does seem like the coaching staff is on their last legs, but then of course Ryan Poles has his vote of confidence a couple days ago with Coach Eberflus. So who knows there? It's rare that you're going to fire a guy after just 2 years in. This is some unprecedented waters here with the record he has here. So maybe there's a reason that he can do it. I'm like you, man. I like Justin Fields. I want him to succeed. I wish it was in Chicago. It just doesn't seem that's going to happen here. And is it partly his fault? Of course. Partly the coaching staff's, of course. The Luke Getsy scheme, what he wants to do, just doesn't do him any favors. It's like you see him have success doing things a certain way. Don't change him completely. Sprinkle in some of your stuff if that's what you want to do. You could have some success going away from what you want to do, because that's what your talent dictates. And we haven't seen that from a Bears coach here in a long time. When's the last time the Bears had a coach on offense or defense that really molded what they want to do towards their talent? You know, I mean, we really haven't seen it. I mean, probably the most successful coach the Bears have had here in quite some time was Vic Fangio, but Fangio ran his scheme. The Bears happen to have guys that could do it for him, but you know, there's really hasn't been a coach in Chicago that have kind of done what he had to do because of what he had on the field in a long time. So that's tough, Brenda. I don't think it's going to happen. I think Justin Fields is going to be gone. I think if it comes down to Getsy or Fields, I think it may be Getsy if Flew stays. This is just what a shitty time to be a Bears fan, because there's so much unknown with the coaching staff and with the team. At least last year we knew it's a rebuild. No problem. This year, what is this? This isn't a rebuild, but it looks like we're heading towards another something this offseason. So much unknown.
If they run Flus and Getsy back, I'm going to put in the paperwork for a sabbatical from SB Nation, just so you know, just in advance.
I can't blame you. Yeah.
I got to let you know. I don't think I could do it. I really don't think I can watch a train wreck again. I just can't. Like, I mean, we know that this isn't going anywhere. So yeah. Make the right decision, George. Move on. Or Kevin, whoever has the power here.
Whoever, yeah.
What about you? What do you have this week?
I'm going back to the trenches. Kevin Fishbane, of course, writes for The Athletic at K Fishbane. He tweets, since 2014, the Bears are 1-22 when they don't record a sack. That's via Stathead. The only win was the 2019 season finale. 8 of those games / losses have come under Matt Eberflus, including yesterday's game against the Saints. This has been a problem. This is why they made the trade for Montez Sweat. You know, they need to get a pass rusher here. But, you know, you're running this system that relies on pressure from the front four. It's not happening. You know, I got some more on that later in my numbers game. But, you know, Montez Sweat, he was fine yesterday. He didn't do a lot. You know, he didn't play as much. Probably he'll play once he gets really involved in the play calling and understands everything he's supposed to do. But I got a bonus tweet. That's Courtney Cronin. ESPN tweets out, per Next Gen Stats, Montez Sweat generated a team high 4 pressures on his 25 pass rushes, 16% pressure rate. It's not bad. You know, I mean, we kind of saw some flashes. Only had 2 tackles, but this is why you go out and get Montez Sweat, because you need someone to get after the quarterback. You need that front four to do something. And so far through 9 games, it hasn't.
Well, just a little preview. I filed my story for tomorrow morning, and I basically updated my sacks, chart that I made a couple years ago when I was kind of thinking, hey, the Bears might be on track to break their franchise record. Like, they got out to a really hot start a few years ago, and I just kind of wanted to see where that would go. Ended up not breaking that record. But anyway, I updated that chart. And the Eberflus era, they almost set a franchise low last year. They had 20 sacks last year, the franchise low. And again, the sacks statistic started in 1982, so it hasn't been around forever. But it has been around for a long time. 82 is a long time. That's incidentally the same year I was born. So it's been a while, right? It's been a minute. The low is 18. Happened in 2003. Just kind of one of those weird years. It was Dick Dron's last year, and then Lovie came in. But if you look at 2-year totals, which, this is Eberflus's second year, he He's got 20 last year. He only has 10. His defense only has 10 this year. That's league low. No one's really even close. And if you look at 2-year total, the low for the Bears in a 2-year stretch is 52. So to avoid a 2-year low, the Bears defense going to have to go on a bit of a heater. So Montez Sweat's going to need to unlock some things in the last 8 games, because they're going to need to get 22 or more sacks to be able to surpass that 2-year low number. So, you know, it's just been a drought, and I don't think it's just about players, right? I mean, I think these players are professional football players. Last year, you could say like, you had a couple guys that just aren't that good, and you know, your talent poor. Okay, but this year, you're dead last in the league by a long shot. And you've got guys that have proven in this league that they can get after the passer. I mean, Yannick Ngakoue is a proven pass rusher. That's what he is. Yep. But yet he's not doing anything. And it's just this lack of creativity. And this lack. I mean, probably the best pressure guy on the team before Sweat got here was Edwards, right? Like, he seems like he's getting involved in the attack a little bit more than anybody else on the line. And you just have to wonder, you know, who's coaching these defensive linemen, and why is there such a lack of creativity? Why is there such a lack of stunts and games that are twists, whatever, that are being played up front? It's sad. It is a sad mark. And people, sacks are over. They're really not overrated. They're not. Like, they kill drives. They lead to forced fumbles, right? Pressures lead to bad throws. They lead to quarterbacks like seeing ghosts and hurrying up their process. Like, it is really important for a defense. Sacks aren't a perfect teller of you know, how healthy a defense is, but it's a pretty quick and accurate mark of where a defense is at. And so the fact that the Bears are so bad at it with a defensive minded head coach, and you're not getting the other piece of it with offense on the other side, it really speaks to why this team is so bad.
You know, I talked earlier about how we haven't seen a coach be creative with things. You know, I do recall Sean Desai as defensive coordinator. A few times he would scheme up some looks for his guys to get them one-on-one pass blocking reps. That's something we haven't seen much here from Coach Flus. You know, he has brought some pressure the last few weeks, a little more, but it hasn't really done much as far as getting the sacks there. The sacks is the defensive version of the offensive explosive plays.
100%.
You want those explosive plays on offense. And when you're on defense, it's the negative. You want to, you know, sack him, you know, make him lose, you know, 10 yards on a play. That's an outstanding job. And like I said, it's not a be all end all, you know, it's not a guarantee for success. You know, I know Bears fans, you know, famously heard a coach years back say, you know, sacks are overrated, but you know, it's the pressures, it's the hits, it's getting after him. And the Bears aren't doing any of that stuff. And that comes down to Coach Flus, the defensive minded head coach.
Yeah, I mean, Bears fans got in on Chuck Pagano for being uncreative too, and you know, Pagano looks like Picasso compared to Matt Eberflus. So, all right, let's move on to the stat of the week. Caught up in a numbers game. I'll start off. I'm taking another response to my call for tweet of the week from our guy Buckus Stats. Quentin is just. He's great. Yes. You know, we love Quentin. He's a friend of the show. But he came away with an interesting stat, and he said the Bears with no takeaways. You know, so again, Bears defense did not turn the ball over. It's related to the sacks issue, this pressure issue. I promise you. But no takeaways in the Eberflus era, 10 times out of 26 games. That's 38%. When he was with the Colts, those no takeaway games were much fewer, about half of that mark, about 20%. And then he compared the Lovie years, which again, the reason why you do that is because Lovie Smith and Eberflus are running, you know, somewhat of a similar scheme. And during the Lovie years, only 10% of games, so one out of every 10 games the Bears played, the defense failed to force a turnover. So the Eberflus era is just dominated by no pressure, no sacks, no turnovers. And if you want to play good defense, those are the things that you're trying to do.
They've changed the rules so much to benefit the offense these days. You know, there's not a lot defense can do. So one of the things they can do is take the ball away, get sacks. You know, that's something they can do, and it just doesn't happen. I know there was a lot of talk a few years back about how you can't really coach takeaways, but you look at Lovie Smith, his entire tenure, he preached takeaways. Coach Luce has the hits philosophy. It came from, you know, from Rod Marinelli, who, of course, you know, learned some of the stuff from Levy Smith. You know, this is a philosophy. It's creating pressure. It's attacking. It's an attack mindset, which the Bears haven't had here. I understand you want to have the nice culture and philosophy, the hits philosophy. It's nice to say it looks great on a t-shirt if you want to do that, but they're not attacking enough. You know, the same goes for the offense. Luke Getsy doesn't attack. You know, I say it all the time. You know, you want to be the hammer, but the Bears are the nail and everything. And everything they do, they react. You know, I want to cheer for a team that they're the one pushing the envelope. They're the one making the defense adjust to them. They're the one making the offense adjust to them. You know, by their pressure packages, by what they're doing on the back end, and too much of this Bears team is just passive, and it stinks. Dare I say, it's very soft.
It's soft, right? Well, it is soft coverage, right? Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say the players are soft, but no, you know, they definitely do run some soft schemes. That makes sense. Yeah, I mean, you go back to like the, you know, the Buddy Ryan era, right?
Let's Buddy Ryan.
You were a Bears fan. They dictated terms, right? Like they're going to come after you, and if you're going to go down swinging, man. I don't want to go down death by a thousand cuts. Like no one wants that. Modern day defense is about taking away the ball. It's about, you know, forcing those sacks so that you steal a possession because it kills the drive. Like that's what it's about. And it's not about sitting back and trying to play bend but don't break. It's not what it is anymore. These quarterbacks are too good, and the offenses, the rules are like you said, bent to the offense too much. So what about you? What's your depressing stat?
I'm staying in the sacks realm, and my number is 9.6. Yannick Ngakoue has 67 sacks in his 7 year career, which equates to 9.6 sacks per season. This year he has 2 in 9 games. He does lead the Bears, tied with T.J. Edwards, linebacker who they blitz on occasion. But Ngakoue is now on pace for the worst season of his career, which was 8. So he's always been a guy that gets 8 to 10 sacks. It's kind of what he does. We assumed as Bears fans he was going to come in. Again, he's not an all-pro type guy, but he's a guy that gets after the quarterback. Hasn't happened. Just 2. Maybe with Sweat now in on the field. What did Ryan Poles say? Sweat's a multiplier. He makes everyone better around him. Hopefully, because Ngakoue is on track for his worst season ever.
Now, remember, the team leader last year was Jaquan Brisker. We talked about that earlier in an earlier episode. He had 4 sacks. I had even talked myself out of that. I was like, that's not a real thing. I blocked that out of my mind, and I confirmed it again today that yes, actually, in fact, Jaquan Brisker was the team leader in sacks last year, the rookie safety with 4. And like you said, like here's Edwards with 2, and he's got the tied for the team lead. I mean, he's almost had to trade for Sweat just to get somebody who can, you know, get like 4 or 5 sacks down the stretch, you know, just save themselves the embarrassment here. So yeah, I you know, the idea of a force multiplier is nice, right? Like you add a number 1 and it makes everybody else's job easier. You'd be able to kick other guys inside, you know, and rush for more advantageous positions. But there still needs to be a little bit of creativity, right? Yeah. Like that still has to happen. You still can't just sit back and spam the same play, right? I mean, it's the Simpsons meme where, you know, Bart's playing rock, paper, scissors, and all he does is just hits rock every time, right? Nothing beats rock. Nothing's ever can beat rock. I mean, that's what this defense feels like all the time, is they're super uncreative and changing up their coverages. They're super uncreative up front. And it leads to a very predictable defensive philosophy that the opposing quarterback figures out, and, you know, by the end of the first quarter. So it's not a recipe for success. Okay. We've done enough complaining about the defense. Let's move over to the offense and talk about Tyson Bagent with our Bagent report. Tyson Bagent was 18 of 30 for 220 yards. He threw 2 touchdowns, both to Cole Kmet. He threw 3 interceptions. He lost a fumble. He was sacked twice, only losing 8 yards, but he carried the ball for 8 times for 70 yards, did his best impression of Justin Fields with that stat line there. Overall, a pretty tough outing for the young man. That's 4 turnovers that he accounted for. 5 total for the Bears. DJ Moore got the ball peanut punched out as well. Bears lost the turnover battle 5-0, which is hard to do. Hard to do that in the modern NFL. But what did you think of Tyson Bagent, who may or may not get another start on Thursday?
I think he's fine. I mean, I think he is the guy that we thought, always thought he would be. He's an okay player. He's an undrafted free agent. You know, we weren't putting him in the Hall of Fame after, you know, preseason. You know, it's, he is who he is. It's exactly how he should be playing for who he is. I will say that Getsy did not do him any favors. I mean, he was much better in the first half. He was on the move. We kind of, it's the same thing with Fields. We saw him on the move. We saw him running a lot of play action. Second half, he's trying to win from the pocket. Why? I don't understand. You know, it's, again, Pro Football Focus charted him out. He was 7 for 7, 110 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks on play action passes. You know, and you hear a lot, oh, it's not sustainable. Bullshit. It is sustainable. You do it until they stop you.
Right.
It's the same thing with the Justin Fields style offense. Oh, you can't just roll him out every play. Why? Why not? You know, and like the whole thing with it's not sustainable, I'm guilty of it too. There's sometimes, okay, you can't just keep, well, you know what? If nothing else is working, you got to do what works. You know, again, make them stop you. And I'm not saying run a rollout play every single play, but don't just completely stop and go, okay, now we're a drop back passing team the whole second half. That's ridiculous. And that's basically what Getsy did.
I don't get him, man. I really don't. I haven't understood him during Justin Fields starts. I mean, he comes out and it's like, I want to make him do it my way. Like, there just feels like a stubbornness with this guy. And there's been a lot of talk about going back. Well, you know, Getsy, you know, he was Aaron Rodgers' coach. How much coaching do you think that Luke Getsy was doing with Aaron Rodgers, known, like, you know, stubborn personality? And, you know, and he was his quarterback coach. It wasn't even a coordinator, right? So we go back to, like, how wise was this to bring in this guy to work with your young quarterback? I just don't see it, right? So this is this whole idea of, like, bringing him back or maybe even elevating him to be the head coach if you fire Flus. Like, I'm so out on anything Luke Getsy related, but there's more evidence that you can see weekly with what he does by shifting away with what works. 7 for 7, like, he's moving the ball. Like, you can spam that as much as you want. The league isn't going to fine you, Luke Getsy, if you call too many play action fakes, right? It's absurd that this guy is allowed to continue to do this. Like, this can't go on. This can't continue.
You know, you hear a lot of stuff about how Fields, you want to cut the field in half, make the game easier for him. Why don't you do the same thing for your undrafted free agent rookie? I understand he can process pretty quick. That's just fine. But if you're processing pretty quick and you're making the wrong reads and you're throwing late and you're getting picked off, you know, 3 times, you know, maybe make the game easier for him too. Maybe run the ball more. Help your young rookie quarterback out by running the ball, play action, get him out of the pocket. I mean, he's not the athlete of Justin Fields, but he's a pretty good athlete. You know, I mean, I'm not sure what his 40 time was, but, you know, I mean, he's not like some plodding guy that wants to just sit in the pocket all day. He's a good athlete. He's young. He showed it in this game. He can get on the move. He's accurate on the move. So get him out of the pocket. Do stuff that works, but, you know, not Luke Getsy. He wants to just do things his way, and it's frustrating.
And Bajan had a little creativity on some of those, right? Like, he got out, he puts pressure on some defenders. That on that fourth down, that little spin out, right? And that number 6 on the Saints, like, kind of lost his mind and just sort of, like, drifted back into coverage. And so he's like, okay, I'll take the first, right? Like, that, do that, put defenders in conflict, let him kind of be creative and make plays. Again, I want to reemphasize, he does not have the arm to make all of the throws. Okay. And can we address this velocity thing now? I just want to, like, for the record, put you on blast here that you tweeted out that his velocity numbers from the combine, which I had never heard of before. I had never heard that that was even a drill at the combine. And I feel like it has empowered people to say that he has a really fast football coming out of his hand. And I just don't know what people are seeing when they're watching him throw the ball. And I think at least those second two picks, the second and third pick, should tell you that, you know, the ball's not flying out of his hand. This is not Josh Allen. This is not Justin Fields with, you know, for that matter. This is a guy that has a limited arm strength. And that means that all of the throws are not there, and he has to be on time with everything that he does.
That's the key. He has to be on time. Tyson Bagen has a strong enough arm to be an NFL quarterback. He does. He doesn't have Josh Allen's arm. He doesn't have Justin Fields' arm. He has a strong enough arm to be an NFL quarterback when things are going good for him, when he's on time. We saw him late on a couple throws. And if you have a really, really strong arm and you're late, sometimes you can get away with that.
You can get away with it.
Bagen can't do it. So the thing with the – I knew you were bringing this up. The thing with the miles per hour at the combine. I just tweeted it out there because he doesn't have a bad arm. He just has – his arm's fine. But it's kind of like the 40 time. If you run a 40 time at the Underwear Olympics and you're an outstanding athlete and you show this, your broad jumping is all outstanding, that doesn't always translate to the football field when you have pads on. Same kind of thing. It's a drill. They time it. I'm not even sure when they do it. I think they may do it during their other, like when they're doing their normal throwing. They just may have a guy there with a radar gun doing left throw, right throw. That's all it is.
I don't know. I've never heard of it.
He is comparable to other NFL quarterbacks. You know, I think he may have even been charted comparable to Mahomes, which is what some Bears fans saw. They're like, oh, it's the same strength. No, it's not the same strength. It's different than when you're playing. Like there, he has good touch on his throws. He just can't zip it in there and make all the plays that you want to see him make. But that's fine. You can survive as an NFL quarterback if you're on time, if you're smart with the football, if you are really understanding your offense fully. He's an undrafted rookie. He'll be if he sticks in around in the league, and I think he will, he'll be a much better quarterback in 5 or 6 years than he is now.
Yep.
That's just what happens, you know. And he may be a starting quarterback down the road for a team somewhere. It's possible. You know, the better you get. He could improve his arm strength. It's not likely. He'll improve it a little bit. I saw someone on social media say, oh, that's the easiest thing for a quarterback to do is work on your arm strength. I'm like, what? No, it's not. It's like a pitcher. You can't just be a guy that all of a sudden, you know, comes out of college. Now I'm gonna throw 99 now.
You know, he's already 23 years old, right? I mean, yeah. You don't just like add that necessarily to your game. It's not like Chad Pennington became, you know, the Josh Allen by the end of his career, right? I mean, this thing generally, and there's a curve where it decreases and then they're out, right? Like that's part of it too. But yeah, you know, like you said, all of those things are true. I just want to like kind of kill this idea that's out there that and Lester likes to do this. He just likes to kind of feed, you know, some red meat out there.
I just throw a stat
for information.
Throw
purposes,
a number,
right? Yeah, that's it. That's like, it's a total innocent, you know, and all that, but. You know, I just want to like kind of kill that because I don't know what you guys are seeing. If you're believing that's everybody has the same arm strength, just blowing my mind. Okay. Quick break. On the other side of this, we will talk everybody's favorite segment, the Three Bears. Stick with us.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, Lester, hot bowl of porridge, cold bowl of porridge, and just right. Where are you going with your hot this week?
I got to go to linebacker. I got to go TJ Edwards.
Okay.
Because he had 15 tackles, which is the third most in his career. I think he had 17 earlier this season against the Chiefs. So, again, a tackling machine, 15 tackles, one tackle for loss. He had one quarterback hit. He had one pass defense on the game. And so far in 9 games this year, he's at an even 100 tackles. So he's close to the, you know, the record. I'm not sure what it is. There's been some talk. Who is it? Who has the actual record? Tackles are not really an official stat up to a certain point. So, but he's going to, whatever he ends up, if he stays healthy, he's going to be up near the top. He'll be on the Mount Rushmore of season tackles guys for sure.
Yeah, wrote that article up a few weeks ago. You know, is it Dante Jones, where that's an unofficial statistic? But you see the statistics because he played longer. But like a guy like Mike Singletary, he retired before those became an official statistic. So you have no idea. You don't know about Buckus, although that was back in the 14-game era, blah, 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 right? So essentially, is it Dante Jones? Is it Brian Urlacher? Or is it Roquan Smith, depending on if you care about solo tackles or, you know, the official stat? But Edwards might challenge that. So that's exciting stuff. I like records. We will track that as we move forward because that's fun. And that's actually a fun record as opposed to, you know, least sacks as a franchise, right? Like that's not that fun to track. But, you know, again, I'm always interested. Even the bad ones I like. For me, I thought there were a couple options in the passing game. You know, we could talk Cole Kmet, right? You know, the two touchdown catches. I think those are worth, you know, talking about. But I wanted to say Darnell Mooney. Nice. Kind of disappeared a little bit this year. He's really faded after DJ Moore got here. But I thought he had a really nice game. Not that I don't expect him to be able to have nice games, but I really liked that catch. That I mean, he caught it what 3 yards beyond the line of scrimmage. You know, had a ran for basically a first down. You know, three defenders are flowing towards him, and he just sort of does a little yoop and goes back into the middle of the field and gets a whole bunch more yardage. I thought that was a really slick play and really great to see Mooney contribute in that way. Overall had a really nice game. And I think that, we forget a little bit that Mooney was really this passing offense a couple of years ago. He struggled last year a bit and then got injured. And then of course you have DJ Moore kind of coming in and taking that alpha role away. But Darnell Mooney's a good football player and he's in his contract year here. And so, wanted to shout him out and, you know, what do you think about Mooney's future in Chicago?
Yeah, I thought you were going to go there. It's, at this point, it's hard to say because, you know, he's in his contract year. You know, who are you going to pay? Jalen Johnson's in a contract year. You know, there's some other stuff, you know, you can't just, you gotta look at the draft. You're paying DJ Moore a ton of money. Where are you going to go there? I like Mooney. I want him to stick around, but this was his best game of the season. And you're looking at it, you know, 5 catches, 82 yards, you know, that's not really an eye popping number, but what he did on the field was pretty good. He kind of showed his elusiveness. He was smart with the ball in his hand. He didn't have any turnovers, which DJ Moore had a turnover, a peanut punch, but nice game from him. This is his best game he's had now in a while. Cause he, like I said, he struggled last year too. I'm not sure what they do with him. I mean, I think he should come back. I think there may have been a contract offer at some point. Usually when you have a guy in your contract year, there is some talks of an extension. It never happened. They weren't public about it. He was coming off an injury. Maybe they want to wait and see what happens here. But at this point, you can't give him too much money. But, you know, this could be it. I mean, at this position, the way the league is, this is his one chance to cash in, and I don't think he's going to do it because the numbers aren't there.
You know, it's interesting because I think before the year, you would have said, well, this guy is tied at the hip to Justin Fields. It's Justin Fields' guy. And so, you know, you're going to sign him just to keep Justin Fields happy, right? Yeah. Like that's kind of how it felt. It's almost like a Randall Cobb situation, even if we thought, you know, just make sure that he's healthy. That was kind of the refrain that I heard multiple times from people. Let's make sure that he's returned from injury, make sure he's healthy, and then lock him up, right?
Yep.
And then with all the questions around Fields, now it's like, that doesn't matter anymore. Like, you know, if Justin Fields is going to be here, then, you know, you don't need to keep Darnell Mooney to appease Justin Fields, so maybe we don't need to keep him. And he has just kind of been lost this year. And I really like Darnell Mooney, the player. So I wanted to make sure we got a chance to talk about him. Hopefully he continues that hot streak and we're talking about an extension for sure, right? Like I'm still prioritizing Jalen Johnson. I was prioritizing him before the year. You know, if it was up to me, I still think he's the first in line right now, but you know, we'll see if Mooney works his way back into that conversation. Let's flip it around and let's talk about Cold Bowl. Plenty of places to go and a loss, but where are you heading with this one?
Yeah, I'm going to kind of take it a different direction. I'm going to go more towards the Chicago Bears injury designation list because they have just they have three guys they bring back from IR today. So that's all eight. You're only allowed eight, right?
Yeah.
Two of the Bears designations this season were spent on Doug Kramer, who is now a Cardinal, and Khalid Kareem, who was cut and brought back to the practice squad. So two of your eight designations, the Chicago Bears in their roster building management 101, I think that they all took a course here. They decided that two of those spots were best to be used on two guys that are no longer on the 53-man roster. And that's Poles, that's Eberflus, that's the whole process here. Just terrible process. And that's an ongoing theme with some of the Ryan Poles blunders, is just process. And this is a bad one. You know, Khalid Kareem, you really had to put him on IR. I mean, he was cut in their season. Yeah, you got him on waivers, but who's this? Come on. This guy is not a guy that's a building block of your team. Cut him. Bring him back if you can. And Dominique Robinson, why is he on this roster? You could have cut him, brought him back. Velus Jones Jr. Okay, you could have cut him and brought him back later. There's just so many guys in this roster. You're like, why are you saving these valuable designations for guys that stink?
So, all right, I want to set the table real quick. So what Lester's talking about is a player's injured, but he's not out for the year. So like if a guy, like, say, tears his ACL, you put him on IR, injured reserve, right? Yeah. He's out for the year. Recently, the league has added this designation to you can put a guy on injured reserve with a designation to return. Back in the day, you didn't have that, which is like, it's kind of amazing to recall that not that long ago, the league did not have as much roster flexibility. The practice squads were much smaller, and you had to really manage your roster in a very different way. And if you, like, the guy was going to be out for a few, you know, a decent amount of time, you're like, you know, I guess we'll just shelve him, put him on IR, and we're going to bring somebody else in, you know, to fill that roster spot. So there's a lot more flexibility now. And then when they created this IR with the designation to return, I think it was one, like, the first year, like you could be one, maybe they kicked it up to three and something. Now it's eight. So there are a lot more of these to use, but players are injured pretty regularly and you're using this as a tool, but they're not, you know, free giveaways. Like they still do have a strategy with them. And when you use that on a player that's kind of bottom of the roster to begin with, you may be taking that opportunity away from using it on a player that you definitely want to protect. So if you use them up all real quick, then you're in a situation where if somebody goes down, you may be put in a hard spot to have to put that player on IR for the rest of the year, or put yourself at a disadvantage and have to, like, you know, play with fewer players that are active on roster day, or even cut somebody that you really don't want to. But using it on players that you end up just cutting, you know, because you don't need them. I don't care if they got claimed or not. Like, that does nothing to me. These are bottom of the roster churn guys anyway. Is poor management. And there have been some procedural issues with Ryan Poles' tenure here so far. So I like that one outside the box. I did not expect you to go there. I know that we have discussed that, but I didn't think that was a cold bowl. So I guess you're serving it to Poles.
Let's go to Poles, probably. Yeah. I mean, it's just the point of it. You know, why are we keeping roster spots, you know, for these? Like a guy like Nate Davis, high ankle sprain. You probably would have put him on IR, you know, shut him down for a while, which is, I mean, he's still shut down, but you could have brought a guy up. I just don't see the point of, you know, Doug Kramer. I know there's a lot of high hopes for him in Chicago because he's a guy from Hinsdale Central. He went to Illinois. Oh my God. He's a local kid, you know. At the end of the day, nobody's running out to get him. And if you do go out and get him, you weren't playing him anyway. You know, he was buried. He was your fourth center because you went out and signed the guy. Okay. Or you traded
Dan Feeney.
Dan Feeney. I can't even think of the guy's name because he's been so invisible. This is not your plan. You know, if he was part of your plan, okay, fine. But Khalid Kareem, come on. And I know it was done before the Montez Sweat trade, but come on. What is the point here?
All right. So mine is this CBS crew that we all had to.
Oh, I hate it.
They made so many mistakes, and I don't want to be mean to Matt Ryan. You know, they're what, the eighth string CBS crew. They're just learning. They're trying. I get it. They're trying their best, and they're an AFC network that is covering two NFC teams. So it's particularly difficult because they haven't called either a Saints game or a Bears game this year. I'm trying to give them at least some benefit of the doubt, but there are times where I swear that one time they said Tyreek Stevenson was a Saints player, right? Like, he's a Tyreek Stevenson breaks up that ball to DJ Moore. And I'm like, I don't think so, right? Unless it's just this random coincidence that they have a Tyreek Stevenson too. But they would get and poor Matt Ryan and who the other color guy was, but, you know, Taysom Hill and Tyson Bagent, boy, they had trouble with that, right? Like they were calling Taysom Bagent, you know, all afternoon. But you know, that's the job, right? Like that's the job. You learn these players' names, and if you don't, if you're not confident in the name, there have been plenty of times where we've been talking about people and I am not totally confident on the name. And I just will then say, so, you know, the corner, right? Number six, for like I did earlier this episode, right? Like you can do that, right? And anyway, it was really distracting for me. You know, the camera angles are bad, which we've talked about before, but the you know, just not being prepared, and it's I'm an auditory learner, so it really takes me out when you can't even pronounce players right or you've got the team switched. It's just weird.
Like you said, go with the last name. You don't have to say a guy's first name. But the crazy thing is, because Tyson Bagent was like a huge NFL story. I mean, this is like, you know, it was a huge part of the NBC Sunday night game. You know, everyone knows what's going on here, and they're still getting his name wrong, which I get it. It's an NFC team. You're not really thinking about him too much. Let's just go with the last name. You know, you don't have to spend some time trying to figure out the whole thing. And I think they got Foreman's name wrong several times. I think he was Devontae at some point for most of the game. Definitely. And it's like, you know, the camera angles we've discussed quite a bit. The camera angles didn't bother me this time. I think partly because the Bears just suck so bad. I'm almost like, I really don't want to watch this replay anyway. But yeah, I mean, it was just, that's a good one. CBS crew. I had a feeling one of us were going to talk about them this week. I'm glad it was you.
Yeah, maybe the camera angle was a little better because of the Superdome. I don't know, because it wasn't quite that like up the offense angle. It was a little bit more towards the defense this week. But anyway, I digress. How about Just Right? What do you got for Just Right, Bull?
I had two. I'm going to go with my first guy here, and I got to go back to Tevin Jenkins. You know, he is the guy that when the Bears drafted him, we thought he's going to be a fixture on the O-line. We thought it'd be a tackle, but now obviously it's going to be a guard. This is who he is. He is just a mauler in the run game. He is a good in pass protection. You know, he's still learning some of the nuance of guard, you know, some of the stuff with twists and stuff. He still kind of struggles a bit here and there, but he can win with just his pure raw physicality. And if you're going to have that at guard, that is outstanding. So Tevin Jenkins, he is who we thought he was. Let's get him signed this offseason.
Yep. Building block. You got to love to see it. And, you know, you got Darnell Wright, right? I mean, he's looking good. I mean, there's some things to get excited about this Bears offensive line. Got to make at least one more investment, if not two, but definitely one more investment in center. And I think you could have something here for the future. For me, I'm going to go Jack Sanborn. So it gets an opportunity to make a start, makes plays, and it really brings into question. You knew what you had. You're the guy that signed him to an undrafted free agent contract last year. You saw what he did down the stretch. Wasn't that enough of an audition to maybe just bring this guy back and allow him to start? I'm not questioning bringing in Edwards because, you know, he's played pretty good football next to, you know, whoever has been there. But again, like Jack Sanborn steps in and I'm not sure you saw much of a dip in productivity to what we see with Tremaine Edmonds.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like Sanborn. I think he, again, you have to wonder what are they evaluating? You know, they really saw him play last year. They saw him in camp and preseason. They saw him during this regular season. Yes, he went on IR. Maybe that has something to do with it. Maybe they were a little nervous about the injury. You know, they value the linebacker spot more than some other staffs will because of the type of scheme they run. So they had to get their Mike and their Will locked up. They paid about the same money that would have cost Roquan. So maybe they're thinking, hey, it's a 2-for-1 deal. This is a way to go. But Sanborn's in there. He's able to play at a pretty high level. You know, he's not the athlete that Edmonds is, clearly, but he's productive, you know, so maybe that money could have been spent on a center or somewhere else on this roster where you have a glaring hole. And if you're the defensive guy, you're the defensive coach. This is your thing. You're brought in here because you're a defensive guru. That's why you got the job. Maybe let's allocate some funds on offense and let you kind of scheme up and coach up the guys on defense. Cause we kind of saw this, you know, where the Bears spent too much money on defense, you know, for a while there. We're like, what are they doing here? They got to put some money in the offense. And now here they are again, same kind of thing. And you would think if you got a guy that knows defense, you probably should have recognized Sanborn as the guy they kind of you know, at least be a stopgap guy before they figure it out.
Yeah, that is such a good point. The idea that you bring in a defensive minded head coach, which I have all the problems with in the world because of where you were at with your roster build and with Justin Fields and the young quarterback. But if you do that, to me, you're saying like, we're going to bring this guy in because we believe in his ability to get more out of less. And this allows us to invest in the offense and we can get premium players over there. And we're going to let our head coach really go to work and get good production out of, you know, because he knows how to get production out of lower drafted guys, or he knows how to pluck guys from the undrafted free agent, or he knows the players that are on the scrap heap in free agency. And he's going to bring these guys in and he's going to get something out of them. All I hear from people that are defending this guy, which are fewer and fewer every week, but is, well, he doesn't have all of the players that he needs. You know, this scheme needs a three technique and it needs it needs this, it needs that. It's like, I'm not interested in that, dude. Like, yeah. Oh, you need an all pro at every level. And you need pro bowlers at every level next to those all pros for this thing to work. We don't have the resources for that. No, get out of here. Like, I'm not interested in that. I want someone who can be creative and solve problems with what you got. Right. So I think that's a really excellent point.
What's the old saying? You know, you either can make excuse or get results, you know, and it seems like Flus is a lot of excuses here. Kyler Gordon, Jaquan Brisker.
Flus excuse. There's something there.
Oh, I'd like a new shirt. We've talked to our guys to get a new shirt.
Flus's excuses, a new segment where we just talk about how it's not his fault. Because he just puts blame on other people, you know, the play was there, the execution. That is actually something that happens at all of his press conference.
The Flus's excuses.
You saw it coined here first, Lester A. Wiltfong Jr. Well done.
I like it. Yeah. So I mean, it's nice that we found a new segment, but man, I wish it wasn't, because you know, there's so much they put into the defense. Draft picks, you know, Walker and Ngakoue. You know, now Montez Sweat, you know, and, you know, it's like, really, you know, all these draft picks are being spent on, like you said, on Flus, and where are the results? I want results, you know, and then we're not getting it.
Well, you've already 4 second round picks, and then next year's second round pick was Sweat, right? So, I mean, that, you know, you've spent 5 second round picks on defensive players, right? I think that's right.
Yeah. That math checks out, if you ask me.
It checks out. All right. Why don't we get out of here? We'll stick around for the YouTube crowd and any questions for those hearty individuals that are joining us on a Monday night after the daylight savings time disappears. It's dark out. Why not? Why not come hang with us over on Second City Gridiron YouTube? You guys that are listening to this on the podcast, give us a try sometime. 6 o'clock every Monday Central Time. But before we get out of here, anything you want to talk about?
No, not really. It's the Bears. No. Let's just get the hell out of here. Move on to the YouTubers, because there's a loyal group in there that want to talk some Bears.
All right, we'll do that. Thanks, everybody, for joining us and for listening wherever you're getting your podcasts at. Till next time, bear down.